GIRLSCAMP. It's Girls Camp.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Girls Camp, or welcome back if you've been around here before. I'm your host, Haley Rawl. And today's episode is sort of a full circle moment because this Girls Camp episode is about Girls Camp, the namesake of the podcast Girls Camp, Girls Camp, the Mormon LDS young women's, usually during the summer, Girls Camp. That's what we're talking about today. We have lots of crazy stories, as you can imagine. We are going to be talking about all the facets of Girls Camp, good and bad, and I cannot wait to get into it. I chose to call this podcast Girls Camp because of all of the experiences growing up as a Mormon girl, I actually have really fond memories of Girls Camp. There's obviously a lot of problematic parts, which we will talk about in due course, but I wanted to kind of mimic the feeling of women being together and enjoying each other's company and spending time with each other and talking about things on our hearts and on our minds, but doing it, obviously, very much outside of the Mormon context. So it feels fun to be talking about the actual Mormon Girls Camp today. Before we dive in to all things Girls Camp, I would like to indulge in a little campfire chat because I have had so many things on my mind that I've been excited to sit down and work out with you all. The biggest thing that I have kind of been sitting with and thinking about due to a number of things, I think this came up for me in a big way after doing that TV show appearance. I talked about this on Instagram, but I got to go on a TV show, which was super, super interesting. It was really fun and really interesting, and I can't wait to tell you a lot more about it. I think it is supposed to air in mid-April. Well, they said April, May, so either mid-late April or early May, and I will do a full recap, deep dive once it's aired so I can talk about it more. All that to say, that show kind of brought some of this up for me, but I have found myself for the first time in a long time since leaving the church feeling jealous of people who have strong religious beliefs. And this has been surprising to me because I had a phase, I think, early on when I deconstructed Mormonism where, of course, it was difficult to, you know, lose the answers I had to pretty much everything and to shift my life so significantly. And then I just got to a place where I feel so good about where I'm at, where I feel so comfortable in the uncertainty of my beliefs and in my new rituals that I just haven't really thought all that much about it. And I'll get DMs and I'll talk to people all the time who say, I just really miss either A, having the answers that the church provided. I miss having that knowledge and certainty, or they really miss the rituals of church going, of going to church on Sunday, of going to activities, of having that built-in community. And whenever I read those, I completely understand. And I think that's obviously so normal and valid, but I haven't really related in a huge way. And as I said, for the first time in a while, I started thinking, man, that sounds really, really nice to have those answers, to have certainty in religious beliefs, and to have community of people who believe all of the same thing. I started to miss not only Mormonism on this cosmic level of all of the answers, but also I've been weirdly kind of missing the feelings of going to church and getting dressed on a Sunday morning and attending church with my family or with my husband, just missing it. And as these feelings were coming up for me, I was kind of just pushing them aside, you know, like, yeah, sure, not that I don't think that's not normal again or healthy, but I just was like, whatever, whatever. And the other day I was driving and I decided to sit with the feeling a little bit longer, which I'm trying to be better at. Still not great, but trying to be better. And as I sat with that feeling of longing for this thing I used to have, I realized something that helped me move beyond it a little bit, which is why I want to share this with you all in case any of you are in a similar place. Perhaps this will be helpful. I don't know. But I realized it's such an interesting thing to miss because I realized that even if I so desperately wanted to be religious again, if I wanted to go back to church, if I wanted to believe all the things, probably at this point it would never be Mormonism again, but maybe if I wanted to go back to any church. I realized that even if I desperately wanted to do that, I don't think I ever could because my lack of belief in Christianity, my lack of belief in a traditional form of God that religion teaches about, in Jesus as Savior, my lack of belief in those things is not a choice. I am not choosing actively to just not believe in something, right? I'm not choosing actively to just not go to a church because I don't want to go and not believe in God because I don't want to believe in God. It really doesn't feel like a choice where I'm at with the experiences I've had, with the things that I've learned. I don't think I could ever go back to those things because of what I know and who I am now. And that thought was actually really freeing to me because it illuminated that part of my missing of the church and the answers, while there's part of that that's just, of course, you're going to miss familiarity, community, et cetera, et cetera. I realized that there was a little bit of guilt creeping in, a little bit of guilt that maybe I was missing something, that maybe if I tried it again, something would be illuminated in a different way, or maybe I had made up my mind in a way that I wasn't allowing myself to be open to whatever could happen. And that was causing me some subconscious guilt, I think. And then having that thought of, wait, even if I wanted to, you know, believe again, I don't think I could ever choose that because it's not really something in a lot of circumstances, I think, that you can just choose. I think it's a really interesting thing to think about, especially when religious people come to non-religious people or people who don't believe in God or Jesus and say, well, you just need to have faith. You just need to believe. And it really truly feels like that's just not an option for me anymore. It just isn't an option for me anymore. And I was talking about this with my mom, actually, in the wake of my dad's death. And we were talking about his death. And I said that I don't believe in an afterlife anymore. And my mom was like, well, you know, why not? And I said, I don't think that there's an afterlife. And I wish there was. I told her, I wish so badly I could believe in that. And she said, well, if you want so badly to believe in it, why don't you just believe in it? And I was trying to explain to her that I don't think it works that way, at least for me. I don't think now with kind of where my brain has come to that I could just, oh, I want there to be an afterlife. Okay, I guess there is one. That's what I believe. I think I can use words like hope. I'm hopeful for certain things about an afterlife, about some form of God. But I don't know if I would ever be able to just choose to believe again. So anyway, that's where my brain's at. And I always say this, which is such a silly thing that I even need to disclaim, as if I'm going to become Mormon again a year from now. I'm not. Don't worry. I always feel like I need to disclaim never say never. Like, who knows? And who knows? You know, I'm sure, as I've said a billion times, I'm sure my beliefs will change and they have changed since I've left the church. I'm sure they will continue to change. But I don't know, that traditional God, Jesus, Christianity thing, at least, maybe there's something for me in Eastern religions. I don't know. But it just doesn't seem like it's just really a choice anymore. And in a way, that feels kind of nice to think of it that way. Enough of my armchair philosophizing for the day. Now we are going to jump into all things girls camp. Where to begin with Girls Camp? If there are any Never Mormons listening, a very brief overview is that it is pretty much a thing everywhere, as far as I know, that the young women will go to a camp together once a year, usually in the summer. The group of girls in the ward from ages 12 to 18, the young women's group, and they go camping, some form of camping with the young women's leaders. And it's a mostly female-centric thing with some caveats. Anytime you go to girls' camp, there has to be at least one, I think maybe two, presiding priesthood members. So at all times when I went to girls' camp, I probably went 5 or 6 times growing up. It was mostly women, but there would be 2 men there who like stayed in their own cabin or tent, and they were just there to hold down the fort, be the priesthood leaders, because apparently that was necessary. But other than those 2 males who were there the whole time, there was also, at least the way I did girls' camp growing up, there would be a bishop's night where the last night of camp, the bishop, the first and second counselors, and their wives would come up to girls' camp and bring dinner, and you would do like a testimony meeting thing. So males came at that point too. The bishops came. But other than that, it was mostly women, and you would just do camp activities. Where I went growing up, I went to Mia Shalom. I know if you grew up in Utah, there's a lot of people who went to Camp Mia Shalom specifically. They have the A-frame cabins, they have the pavilion, they have the lake where you would go canoeing and you would do singing around the lake. Just kind of a typical church youth camp. You know, I know that many other churches do the same type of thing, and it's all in the same vein. You do camp songs, you do campfires, you learn about tying knots and all of those things. You go on hikes and stuff like that. And then, you know, the Mormon way, there's lots of Mormon doctrine mixed in with the camping stuff. I was trying to think if I had any crazy stories of my own, but all of my stories are more just happy memories from girls' camp. I had a really great ward. Well, the females in my ward were really great growing up, and I remember just having a really good time going to girls' camp, hanging out with my friends in the ward. Obviously, there are some things about it that are annoying. I remember some homesickness certain years, but for the most part, I think it was really fun bonding time for me. And it was fun to be doing things that I feel like were less traditional for the girls to do in Mormonism. You know, you are learning things like fire building and survival things pretty lightly, but still it felt kind of different from the norm. And it was a good time. I have some photos that my friend Taryn sent me. Shout out, Taryn. I was dying looking at these photos. They are from a photo shoot that we did at girls' camp. I believe this was the night I had my first overnighter at girls' camp, and we stayed up all night, and the next day we got in some weird outfits and did a photo shoot around Camp Mia Shalom. So I will share some of those with you when this episode goes live. And it was fun reading through these submissions, because I feel like more so than a lot of other topics we've discussed here on the Girls Camp podcast, there was a lot of fond memories, I think, for a lot of you as well. And I was thinking, as I was reading through the submissions, don't get me wrong, there's some problematic shit going on as well. But as I was reading through the submissions, I was thinking, isn't it interesting that the seemingly least problematic element of growing up Mormon is Girls Camp, which is one of the only places where it's heavily female dominated, where the women are actually leading without as much supervision from men. I don't know, something to think about, that with the women led space, it seems like there was a lot less craziness going on, albeit there is still some craziness going on, which we will get into now. The first submission reads, testimony meeting at girls' camp. Looking back, I feel very uncomfortable when I think of how performative and dramatic testimony meeting was. Almost every girl would cry while bearing their testimony in a forced, intense, needing to prove our devotion kind of way. One year when I was 15, the girl next to me said that she saw Joseph Smith listening to our testimony meeting. I think about that comment a lot and wish that our leaders took more responsibility to normalize a more calm, joyful, and peaceful testimony meeting. I know our leaders were doing their best at the time, but in my opinion, it can be a very toxic tradition for kids 12 to 18 years of age to participate in. Girls Camp testimony meeting could probably be its own subgenre to dig into, because there is something so unique and intense, that's a good word for it, as this person said, about a Girls Camp testimony meeting. You are usually out in the woods. You are usually away from your family and have been for a few days. You are, you know, just out of your element, doing different things than you're used to. You have spent a week doing spiritual activities, sometimes spiritually manipulative activities. And then at the end of the week, you all sit together, oftentimes around a campfire at night, and are strongly encouraged, in some cases even told specifically that you have to bear your testimony. And this leads to what this person described so well, just a lot of really heightened emotions that I think get confused. Because I remember, speaking personally, sitting at girls' camp as a teenage girl and listening to everybody go around the circle bearing their testimonies. And it sort of became this trauma dump situation where we are all sharing very intimate details about our lives and getting really vulnerable and really honest, which can be really beautiful. But then it can get a little bit skewed because it all has to tie back to, I know the church is true. I know Joseph Smith is a prophet. I know that the Book of Mormon is true. It's taking this vulnerability and honesty and heightened emotion for all of those reasons and putting it into this box of, see, the church is true. We're all sitting here crying. Look at all this emotion. Everyone sharing their traumas and what got them through, and it's all leading to the conclusion that the church is true. And now, of course, in retrospect, that feels a little bit complicated. And you know, you have comments like this girl pointed out where someone said, I feel like Joseph Smith is watching this testimony meeting. And you know, that gets a little tricky. Like I'm saying, there's just some elements there that I think, especially for young people, you can get confused. You can get easily swept up in the drama of it. And a lot of people wrote in about these testimony meetings and feeling like it almost became sometimes like a competition. Like people are trying to cry harder or trying to share more because that's just what the environment is kind of asking you to do. So yeah, the testimony meeting thing, I remember every single testimony meeting that I sat in at girls camp, and I remember it feeling very, very emotional. And I think there's a piece of it that was this true connection with the girls around me, with my peers, about them being honest and open about their struggles. And then I think there was this kind of manipulation thing going on too. I think it's a both and for me. Okay, next write-in. One year at girls camp, there were some girls camp songs that the leaders had banned. One of them was I Like Hot Priests and I Cannot Lie, and Tall, Dark, and Handsome Missionaries, which was sung to the tune of Popcorn Popping, Cryface. The leaders would get mad if they caught us singing them, but the older girls would teach us the lyrics in secret as a form of rebellion. Ooh, the girls camp songs. You know that 14-year-old Haley just lived for the girls camp songs. We would sing these songs in the morning. I think there was a morning gathering where everybody would get together and we would pray and sing songs. We would sing them around the campfire. We would sing them for all sorts of things throughout the week at camp. And I loved it because I love shit like that. But some of the songs were a little bit questionable. And the song mentioned here, I Like Hot Priests and I Cannot Lie, that was not banned back when I went to girls camp. And I am going to read you the lyrics now, just so we know what we're dealing with. Okay, before I read this, if anyone's listening that doesn't know, the priests are the oldest group of young men. So it's deacons, teachers, and priests, and it's just broken up by age. So the priests, I think, are the 16 to 18 year olds. So it's essentially just like the older boys in the ward. Okay, I like hot priests, and I cannot lie. You other girls can't deny. When a guy walks in with a scripture case and a smile on his face, you get a date, a celestial mate. Oh, but wait, he's going on a mission, leaving you wishing that you had a man, someone to hold your hand. So deacons, what? Teachers, what? We don't want your features, because your brothers are hot and you are not, so bring on those righteous priests. Huh. I was really tempted to sing that one to you, and there is another song which I think I will sing to you shortly. Trigger warning. not trigger warning, but jump scare warning, perhaps. This song is set to the I like big butts and I cannot lie, just so you can imagine it. A little bit questionable on those lyrics, for sure. Talking about the older boys in the ward being super hot and super spiritual. I think what's so interesting about this genre of girls' camp songs is that it's such a mixed message. You are learning such intense messages about chastity and purity and virtue, and then you go to girls' camp and sing these really silly songs about how hot and spiritual the priests in the ward are. It's just a funny mixed messaging thing, and I don't think, obviously, the lyrics are quite tame. I don't think it's really a big deal. But I do think that the mixed messaging of it all is where it gets kind of funny for me. There's another song, which I do have committed to memory and which I will sing for you now. It is, I don't know what this one is called. Mormon, I don't know. But it goes, I know a Mormon boy, he is my pride and joy. He knows most everything from Alma on down. Hey, one day I'll be his wife, we'll have eternal life. Oh, how I love that Mormon boy. M-O-R-E-M-E-N, Mormon, Mormon, sing it again. And then you continue singing that song faster and faster each time. The Mormon to more men in the chanting section of the song is actually fucking funny, in my opinion. I loved that one, as you can see, because it's still committed to memory. But same kind of thing there, right? Like, all in good fun. Maybe, but same kind of thing as that other song where you are putting on a pedestal these very young men for their apparent spirituality, because spirituality is the hottest thing that a man can have, and fantasizing about being an eternal wife to this boy. I think the other thing here is that there's this weird centering of men still in these songs. And I don't mean to make more of this than there is, because I think these are just kind of silly songs, to be honest. But if we're going to go there, I do think there's a weird centering of men and how there's multiple songs like this that we would sing just about hot Mormon boys when we were at girls' camp, and just kind of the tropes of girls just fawning over boys and wanting to be wives and mothers for eternity. I don't know. Doesn't sit as well with me now as it perhaps did when I was 14, chanting those lyrics enthusiastically. There's one more song that I am going to subject you to. This is the one the person mentioned that goes to the tune of Popcorn Popping. I had not heard this one. I did not remember it. Maybe it's newer, but it goes like this. I looked out the window, and what did I see? A tall, dark, and handsome returned missionary. Spring has brought me such a nice surprise, tall, dark, and handsome right before my eyes. I can take an armful and kiss all three, but only one for eternity. It wasn't really so, but there's sure to be a tall, dark, and handsome return missionary. I am not sure what is meant when these lyrics say, I can take an armful and kiss all three, but only one for eternity. I think the only one for eternity is clear, but there should be maybe two missionaries coming home together, like a mission companionship. I'm not sure where the three came from there, but I guess you could kiss all three, but only keep one for eternity, according to these lyrics. Like I said, never heard that one, but just doing the same kind of thing that those other songs are doing. Moving on from the girls' camp songs, next write-in. I had my first girl-on-girl makeout session at girls' camp. It was at Bear Lake, and me and this girl were in the tent, and she wanted to braid my hair. She kissed my cheek, and I turned around and planted one on her. LOL, best experience ever. I was 14. Now we are both married to women. She changed me forever. Ugh, you know I'm obsessed. I've talked about this on the podcast before, because I've heard through active members right now that a very real, in very heavy air quotes, issue that these leaders are facing with girls camp is that girls are hooking up with each other, or they're making out with each other, or they're falling in love with each other, or they're flirting with each other. And I think it's so funny, because what are you going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do about it? You can't stop love. And the fact that it is probably happening more now, I'm sure it happened in the past as well, but as people are feeling hopefully more free to explore their sexuality, the fact that this is happening more and more at girls camp is just so badass to me. It just is so badass. I had a lot of people write in that they had kind of experiences like this, like their first little spark with a girl or a kiss or something like that. I'm just really happy for these two women to have been able to discover that piece of themselves while at girls' camp, of all places. Next, write in. I had a young women's president who would call her husband at night in our very small A-frame and talk dirty to him for like an hour before going to sleep, with all the girls tucked into our sleeping bags and obviously within earshot. This same young women's president also had a thing for my dad and tried to break up my parents on multiple different occasions. I'm pretty sure her marriage was failing, and that's why she felt the need to keep things hot and heavy while she was at camp, despite sharing an A-frame cabin with a bunch of 12 to 15 year olds. Ooh, that poor young women's president, although that was not appropriate and she should not have been dirty talking to her husband while sharing a cabin with literal 12 year old girls. That's wild. Feels icky that she maybe knew that they could still hear, like, just step outside, just go elsewhere if you need to get in some dirty talk with your husband. But it sounds like this woman was obviously struggling, and that would be a really wild thing to overhear. I can't even imagine what my 12-year-old self going to girls camp would have thought if I heard that. I'm also surprised there weren't other leaders around kind of checking on that or calling her out on it. But wild, inappropriate behavior from the young women's president. I honestly, not for this situation specifically, but I have a lot of sympathy for just people in leadership generally in the church. I think being a young women's president would be immensely overwhelming and taxing. I can imagine this person was obviously married and dealing with that. A lot of times these leaders, I feel like in young women's maybe especially, I got called into the young women's presidency. I can't remember exactly what my calling was, but I think I was a first or second counselor when I was going to BYU, had just married Bentley, and I remember feeling so overwhelmed by that calling. I was so overwhelmed about having to do the activities. I went to girls' camp, and just at that phase of my life, it was such a burden. And even though I really loved being with the young women and I loved certain elements of it, I remember feeling very, very stressed and overwhelmed at that stage of my life, and the calling just kind of putting me over the edge. So I feel for these women that are really pulling off this huge event with girls' camp and just, you know, actively involved with the young women in any way. But of course, does not excuse this very odd, very inappropriate behavior from Miss Young Women's President. Next, write in. I have a crazy one for you. My senior year of high school, I was a very rebellious Mormon. I was too scared to leave the church because I thought I believed it, but I didn't follow any of the rules. Right after I graduated high school, I had my last girls' camp in Moab. I had the coolest girls in my age range that I had gotten pretty close with, and we all shared a tent. We were in the tent at one point and started sharing some tea and came to find out that we were all secret stoners. One girl was so brave and actually brought a cart with her. That night, after all of our activities, when everyone else was asleep, we all got really high. It was honestly the most spiritual experience I've ever had at girls' camp. The stars in Moab in the summer are amazing, and even more amazing while stoned. We all had the best night filled with stargazing, snacks, and laughter, and that will be something I never forget. In the name of girls' camp, amen. What a lovely experience. What a fun way to push back against the confines of what girls' camp is by sneaking out and getting stoned and bonding with your fellow women. I love that so much. I wish I was there. And now I want to go to Moab and get stoned and stargaze with a bunch of women. When I was 15-ish, the 10 girls in my cabin got together one evening and shared our biggest sins, air quotes. Three of the girls shared they had given hand jobs. They actually made a pact to speak to the bishop the following Sunday to repent together during our bawling confession fest. The rest of us promised that we would support them through it. We all told each other it was okay and we loved each other, comforted each other, and reminded one another of the atonement. The next morning, one of the girls told on us and our ward young women president came into the cabin with the stake young women's president. Our leader announced she was telling our parents what happened, put us on bathroom cleaning duty, along with confinement in a cabin with an adult for the last day of camp. No participating in activities because of our horrible behavior. She cried as she told us how disappointed she was in us for talking about such horrible things like sex. What was a beautiful, loving, bonding experience turned into one of complete shame. Our bishop was told everything and came into Young Women's one Sunday to chew us out. The stake Young Women president ended up talking to each of our parents about it, and our ward Young Women's president resigned because she felt she had let everyone down by letting us girls have that discussion. It was absolutely horrible. This is so horrible on so many levels. There's part of me that thinks, obviously, that first confession fest, as this person called it, is a similar product to the testimony meeting thing where people start sharing things and then everyone starts sharing. And I don't know, it can get a little tricky just because there's that layer of sin being attached to that behavior. But then, of course, I think it's so lovely and wonderful that these girls felt safe enough that they could share things that were troubling them. I'm sad that those things had to trouble them that intensely, I guess, was my first point. But I think the fact that they could share those things with each other, that they were in a safe environment, that they trusted each other, and that they could also find that they weren't alone. I can imagine that was a really big deal. I very, very rarely opened up about any of my sexual quote sin when I was growing up in the church because it felt really embarrassing even to tell my girlfriends or to tell people in my ward. It was very isolating for me, and I think it would have been very nice to be able to talk about that with my peers and know that I wasn't alone in that. And I'm glad that they had that. It's so terrible how those leaders reacted. It's so terrible anyway, but it is kind of ironic to me too, because here are these girls sharing that they think they have sinned, that they want to be better, which is exactly what the church wants good girls, using so many air quotes here, to do. And yet they're being punished for it because they didn't do it in the right way. They didn't do it under the right circumstances. This one also called to mind something I've been thinking about a lot because Rosie Card shared about this on Instagram. And then I happened to listen to a Science Versus podcast on gossip. And Rosie was talking about what is the usefulness of gossip? Is gossip always bad? And then the Science Versus episode talked a lot about gossip and how it can actually be really useful. And this kind of reminds me of that, of how I think power structures, like the structure of the church, really wants to shut down, in a lot of cases, people relating to each other on things that don't fit the mold of Mormonism, and how powerful it can be to get together with people and kind of realize you're having similar struggles or you're having similar concerns about whether it's the church as a institution or any other institution or any people in authority, if it's at your job, just that there can be something really powerful about coming together and expressing concerns and reservations. And when you realize that other people share those, then you're kind of put in a position of power where you can figure out how to change it or if you want to say something about it. You're just not isolated in the same way if you're able to gossip about things. And this reminded me of that too, that there's a lot of power in doing that. And it seems like the leaders recognized that really immediately and just wanted to shut it down so completely. And that's such a bummer. I'm so sorry to feel like you had that bonding experience and then just get shamed and shamed and shamed. That really sucks. Next write-in. After the classic girls camp cry night, I think they're talking about the testimony meeting thing, our leaders told us there was one more activity before bed. They put us in blindfolds and guided us to a rope. They told us the rope symbolized the iron rod and we needed to hold on to it to make it to the tree of life, just like in Lehi's vision in the Book of Mormon. During the activity, our leaders would come up to us and whisper in our ears, telling us our family members or friends were in danger or hurt to try to get us to let go. My young women's president came up to me and whispered, "Your dad has been in a car accident and he needs you. Come with me." When I would let go to go help my dad, they would tell me it was a temptation and that I had sinned. I would then have to go over to my bishop that was sitting on the side and hear a scripture from him before I could go back to the iron rod. When we finally did make it to the end, there was a tree completely lit up, like the tree of life in Lehi's vision, and a man underneath dressed up as Jesus telling us we had made it to eternal life. Super messed up. Wow. I did not have to do this, but many people wrote in that they did some form of this absolutely crazy object lesson. The Tree of Life object lesson, where there is some form of an iron rod with a tree at the end of the path, and you have leaders pretending essentially to be Satan, trying to lead you away from the iron rod, and you are supposed to not give in to temptation and make it to eternal life, Jesus, at the end of the path. The problems with this seem so clear to me. These kind of object lessons, I think, imprint on our bodies and our souls differently because you actually are like feeling it. I mean, the object lesson works in that sense where you're feeling the intensity of trying to make it to Jesus. And then someone's whispering in your ear, someone in authority, "Your dad died," and you're supposed to like not flinch from holding on to the iron rod. That does something to a young brain. Those things stick with us differently. It's so intense. It's so emotionally and spiritually manipulative. And it's just so unnecessary. I think these kind of object lessons really freak me out because they seem so obviously spiritually manipulative. Like, why can't you just teach the young women about the Tree of Life and talk about it? You're trying to get them in this emotional, intense setting to like really drive it home in a really scary way. And unfortunately, it works. Maybe not works in building people's testimonies, but works in essentially traumatizing young people that are being spiritually manipulated through these kind of tactics. And maybe those words are sounding crazy and harsh. I don't even know if all of this is conscious on behalf of the leaders doing it. I think shit like this, a lot of times some people do it and then it's like, "Oh, did you hear that ward did this cool activity with the iron rod?" And people just kind of are doing it, not realizing how scarring that can actually be. But that sounds super freaky. Okay, next write-in. Two words, snipe hunting. I don't know if this went down everywhere, but I know this was supposedly some girls' camp tradition that they used to do with every class of first-year campers. Snipe hunting is a rite of passage where you hunt for some exotic animal. Descriptions vary, except you have to do stuff like put toothpaste all over your face, be blindfolded, or whatever other embarrassing things the older girls could think up in order to attract slash catch the snipes. My first year of camp, the older girls wake me up in the middle of the night, rubbed toothpaste all over my face, blindfolded me and took me into the woods to make scary noises, freak us out, etc. But listen, I was 12, not 5. I knew it was fake and just a prank. The thing that drove me insane is that they were adamant it was legit. The gaslighting was crazy. My whole memory of the snipe hunt is being pissed because my face stung and was catching flies with the toothpaste and I was blindfolded in the forest, knowing I was there to be humiliated with a bunch of older girls laughing at me. I hated those girls the rest of my time at girls' camp. Snipe hunting is such a deep cut Mormon lore. And I know many of you listening are gonna be like, "Oh my God, I forgot about snipe hunting." I had forgotten this too. It was a thing when I went to girls' camp. I was never taken to go snipe hunting. It never got that far for me. But I remember it was always talked about. It was more like an inside joke with the older girls. We would always be like, oh, snipe hunting, kind of try and trick the younger girls into thinking there was something called snipes that people would go hunt that only lived at that campsite. But luckily, I never had to do the toothpaste on the face thing. So many of you wrote in that you actually did this, that the older girls at camp would put toothpaste on your face. There was a lot about tampons in there, like, have you put your hand in something and there'd be like, there's a snipe in there. And it was just like a wet tampon or something weird. So odd, really bizarre. It's essentially just hazing, but I would be so curious to know what the origin of this is, because it seems pretty widespread from my experience and reading all the people who wrote in about it. Why snipes? Why toothpaste? Why? Very weird. Very weird. And yeah, sounds shitty to be blindfolded with toothpaste all over your face when you know it's not real. I do remember at one point in my life thinking like, wait, is this real? The snipe hunting thing? And I think I figured out fairly quickly that it was all some joke, but I believed it for a sec. Next write-in. My first year at girls camp, I was new in the ward. We were doing a slip and slide, and I had a leader tell me that I had to change because my one-piece swimsuit was not appropriate. Mind you, we were at a camp of all girls, and I was 12 years old. My mom helped me go shopping for a swimsuit for girls camp specifically. I went in my tent and cried because I was so embarrassed. Still to this day, not sure what the issue was or if the leaders were just enjoying being controlling and problematic. So many stories of girls going to girls camp, wearing swimsuits, sometimes a tankini, sometimes a freaking one piece. Not sure what else you want a girl to wear to do a swimming activity. And they got called out by their leaders for being immodest. It's so sad because you would think that at least just amongst the women, we would not be doing the slut shaming, modesty shaming thing, but it was still rampant. A lot of stories, it was in the name of, well, there are some priesthood holders here because of the two men I mentioned before that are sometimes at girls' camp. And that's even freakier in a lot of ways, because why does it matter if two men see a 12-year-old in a tankini? That should never be an issue. That's so freaky, so hurtful, and just so many stories like that. Having to wear t-shirts over swimsuits, just not being able to enjoy existing as a human girl at a girls' camp without being modesty shamed. It just never ceases to amaze me and also deeply infuriate me. I'm so sorry. That sounds so isolating and traumatizing. Here's another one of those. It was my first year at girls camp. I was 11. I had gotten my period while we were swimming in a pool for one of the activities. The leader said that it was Satan punishing me because I had brought a tankini and it wasn't modest. It was covering absolutely everything. I just don't like how one pieces fit me. She then called the bishop up the mountain and had him have an intervention. He called my parents, asked me if my soul was pure, and basically slut-shamed me for 4 hours. My leader asked him to stay the rest of the week to have daily talks with me so I could stay clean. They didn't let me participate in anything that involved water after that because they didn't want me to give the other girls the impression that what I was wearing was acceptable in the eyes of Jesus. Safe to say, I didn't ever go back to girls' camp and altogether left the church when I was 17. Yes, as you should. That is absolutely outrageous. That is so terrible. Saying Satan's punishing you for getting your period is so bad on so many levels. Getting judged for wearing a tankini, being pulled away by a man and chastised alone. All of it's awful, awful, awful. And you were 11 years old. Have any of you talked to an 11-year-old lately? Like, been around a child? You are literally such a child at that point. The things that that does to you when, as a child, you are being taught that that is such a huge deal to wear a tankini, that Satan would punish you for it, and multiple adults in authority are confirming that message, is just god awful. I'm so sorry. I hate this so much. It really, really, really enrages me. Ugh. Let's lighten it up a little bit. I have a couple write-ins. I love these write-ins where I'll be reading through all of these stories, and some of them are kind of heavy and some of them are kind of long. And then there will be these random write-ins that are super short, lack so much context, and are just completely outrageous. And I'm going to read a couple of those now. Someone wrote in, "One of my leaders was tired of wearing a bra, so she showed us that you can just duct tape your tits." That's all. That is the entirety of the submission. I don't know why they were talking about that. I don't know who had the duct tape or how the leader showed them, but that happened to someone at girls' camp. Next one. "One girl ferociously chewed on large sticks and branches the entire week of camp. Everyone tried to get her to stop, but she absolutely refused and just kept gnawing away." When I read that one last night, I showed it to Bentley and I was speechless. I just showed it to him. He read it, and I don't think we even said anything to each other. It's so weird. Gnawing on sticks the entire week of camp. Not stopping. Gnawing away on sticks and branches. I'm speechless yet again. Oh, here's a good one. "One of my leaders stubbed her toe or something and yelled, 'Oh, my outer darkness. I think about that still like once a week. Please just say hell.'" Oh, my outer darkness. I did HE double hockey sticks for hell instead of saying, "Oh, my hell." Obviously, I said, "Oh, my heck." I also said HE double hockey sticks a lot. Never have I ever, nor will I ever, except for maybe I will, because it's kind of funny, say, "Oh, my outer darkness." That one is something else. Next one. "Our bishop came for two nights, did some activities with us, all the good stuff. On his last night, he had an affair with one of my young women leaders. It was the talk of the town for 3 months. Both families divorced and left the church. Good old Alpine, Utah." Woof. How's that for some girls' camp tea? For some drama going down at girls' camp. The bishop, the young women's leader, having an affair while physically at girls' camp. That's wild. And I'm sure that the ward was absolutely abuzz with the news. And I cannot lie to you, I'm so curious who this is. Not that I would probably know them, but my nosy little self wishes I could see a photo of both of these people. And also, that sucks, though. Sucks that they got divorced and it led to that. But there you have it. Some shit going down at girls' camp. Okay, next one. "One year in my ward, there was a group of girls that snuck into another group of girls' cabin and they drew Sharpie mustaches on them. The newly mustached girls woke up the next morning and accused the other girls of bullying and battery because they did it with Sharpie instead of eyeliner. Literally, the entire ward took sides and lawyers were called. My bishop at the time called me into his office and told me that since I was the only young woman that didn't go that year, I was God's called peacemaker. I moved not long after this, but I'm pretty sure the families still hold major resentment towards each other." Not lawyers being called because of Sharpie mustaches. Calling it battery because these girls drew Sharpie mustaches on the other group of girls. Man, some people, I don't know, need more things to worry about. That's wild. "There was a lot of pranking going on, apparently, for some of you at girls' camp. I'm not a big pranker. I don't love to prank or to be pranked. I particularly dislike being pranked. My mom is actually kind of a pranker, and she..." She's going to be so mad I'm saying this. "It was April Fool's Day. This was a while ago. I don't know. I was young. And my mom loves April Fool's Day, which I love about her. And it was general conference on April Fool's Day. General conference weekend lined up with April Fool's. And I remember so vividly, I walked upstairs from my bedroom and my mom was cracking eggs. She was making crepes because we always do crepes on general conference weekend. And she said, "Yeah, general conference got canceled because President Hinckley died." This was during President Gordon B. Hinckley's time as prophet. And I was so distraught and upset. And Megan, my older sister, was like, that's a joke, Mom, like April Fools. And I was like, Megan, Mom would never joke about something as serious as that. There's no way she would joke about that. And then my mom was like, actually, April Fools, President Hinckley's alive and well, and General Conference was going on as always. I love to bring that up to her. I think it's so, so funny. All right. So concludes the first installment of Girls Camp on Girls Camp. I'm sure we will revisit that topic again sometime in the future, but it was really fun to get into, and I just remembered a lot of things, had a lot of good memories, some not so good. As always, it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag with Mormonism and with Girls Camp, and maybe with the Girls Camp podcast, who knows? But I enjoyed digging into that with you all, reading your stories. Thank you for listening. Thank you for submitting. Thank you so much for being here. Please follow, smash that subscribe button, leave a review. All the things would mean so much. I'm so, so happy you're here, and I hope you have a wonderful week until we talk next Wednesday. Bye.